Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good afternoon and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. This is Quinn Tu, your host of Doing Good is Good for Business. And our topic today is going to be this interesting idea called an ESOP, or otherwise known as an Employee Stock Ownership Plan. And our leading gentleman is Eric Muse, who is one of the two general managers at Oliver's Market in Sonoma County. And a little bit about Oliver's: they have been around since 1988, and they started as a one-man show, if I understand correctly, and has now grown to a company of four stores and over 1,000 employees. So, without further ado, Eric, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Quinn. I appreciate you having me.
Well, I am so excited to hear how Oliver came to be such a successful market and what you're doing with it. I've see some exciting things that are happening at the company that I want to dive into. So let's start with the first question. How did you end up at Oliver's being one of the general managers?
Well, I've been at Oliver's for quite some time now. I actually started when I was in high school and continued to work here when I went to Sonoma State University right out of high school. And the opportunities that the company provided me and the fact that my opinion and my voice mattered just kept me very interested. And before you know it, I had worked my way up the ladder a bit, and eventually became an assistant store director, then a store director. Finally, in 2007, I actually got to open our Stony Point location, which was a load of fun for me. And when our CEO retired in late 2016, I finally had the opportunity, along with my partner, Scott Gross, to become co-general managers of the company.
I can't believe that you've been with the company since high school. That is a very rare accomplishment, especially these days. So what was it that kept you going back to Oliver's, or kept you at Oliver's?
Well, there's a few things. As I had mentioned, Steve Moss, the owner and founder of the company, he was never an individual who believed solely in his way was the only way. And the fact that when I saw opportunities, at least things I perceived to be opportunities for the company, and I would ask questions or make suggestions, he was an owner of a business that would actually listen to me even as a kid at the time. And so that was a lot of fun. And, you know, to be honest, I actually met my wife at the store back in, probably 1990 or so. And so
we
continued to work together, and actually she still works here as well. And that's pretty much the beginning of the story for me with Oliver's.
Wow. So it really has become like a real part of your family.
Yes, it has. And Oliver's likes to pride itself.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Oliver's likes to pride itself on its family environment. And I do believe that a large majority of our staff feels like they're working with at least extended family members, and quite often they actually are family members. We have a lot of family employed throughout the organization.
That's really nice to hear that families can work together and make something meaningful in a community. So one of the reasons why Oliver's Market got on my radar and what piqued my interest was that you are a social purpose corporation and you're also an ESOP. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, it is.
Let's talk about those two things. So what exactly does the social purpose corporation mean for Oliver's as a business?
Well, what a social purpose corporation means for Oliver's is it allows us the ability to connect our mission statement with what we're actually trying to do. And what I mean by that is as we started entertaining the idea of becoming an ESOP, an employee stock ownership plan, that we were looking for ways to allow the company to remain locally owned and operated. And as we turned it over to the employees, or looking at the idea of turning it over to the employees, the idea of a social purpose corporation came along. And it's very similar to a B Corp, which you hear of quite often. And it's it's a corporation that's not just organized to chase bottom line dollars, profits for its shareholders. And when you're not just chasing profits for your shareholders, it allows you to really embrace what we actually have written into our mission statement, and that's to be a participating member of the community, looking to benefit our employees, our communities, our environment, so on and so forth.
That's, you know, awesome. And as listeners of this podcast is aware of, I have invited benefit corporations in the past to come on the show and talk about that as well. How is it like in terms of the decision to become a social purpose corporation, or were there discussions about the benefit corporations as well?
There were discussions about the benefit corporation as well. The social purpose corporation is there's a little less paperwork involved, if you will, and it's not quite as costly. But at some point in time, I'd imagine we'll look to actually move to a B Corp.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that both have their purposes and both are equally valuable in their different ways, but just that the social purpose corporation is not as popular of a choice, so people are less likely to know what it is. Is it something that matters to the customers of Oliver's Market that you are a social purpose corporation?
I believe it is. Many of our customers shop with us because we're a local company and that we truly do participate in our communities. As a local company, when we're successful, more of our success obviously translates to more tax dollars generated through the community supporting infrastructure, our participation
Sure.
in local community events. Helps those events, and at this point in time, our brand's pretty strong in the local area, so when we're there and we have a booth with some good food at it, it seems to attract a few people, and so I think everybody has a little bit of fun with that.
Food always helps with everything.
Certainly.
So let me ask you a little bit about how the ESOP plays into this unique business model that Oliver has set up. What was the inspiration behind becoming an employee stock ownership plan company?
Well, it had a lot to do with a succession plan. Steve Moss, the owner and founder of the company, was looking to participate a bit less in the day-to-day operations of the business. And at the time, our CEO was taking on more and more of the responsibilities. We had actually received offers from other grocery stores to purchase our company. But at the end of the day, our concern was that Oliver's wouldn't remain Oliver's, wouldn't remain a part of the community. And for Steve, what was very important is recognizing all the people over a period of, at that point in time, 20 to 25 years that had contributed to the organization that might not be able to either maintain their current positions or even to remain with the company. Because oftentimes the higher level positions are pushed out when taken on by a larger corporation. And so the next decision was, well, if we're not going to sell to a big company and there's no real family succession plan, what other options are there? And that's when we stumbled across the employee stock ownership plan. And from there, over a period of, it was probably about 3 years it took to get the whole thing pushed through, we were able to turn 43% of the ownership of the company into an employee stock ownership plan.
How have you seen that change affect the people who work at Oliver?
Well, there's different levels to that. The majority of the people who have been here for an extended period of time and really accept this as the job that they're going to do for a while are real excited about it. They look at it as, it's another retirement benefit for them, if you will. So over the long term, as the company does better, their retirement portfolio does a little better. And with that, I'm seeing engagement at the level where people actually start, we're hoping they'll start thinking like owners. And we have seen that where people are looking around and going, oh, man, you spilled that on the floor, or you burnt that roast, or you broke that case of this, that, or the other thing. That's my money you're breaking. Let's work on what we can do to improve that. And, you know, truthfully, it starts at usually the higher levels, because there's a little more of an understanding of what the plan means for them. But over the last couple of years, it's trickled down quite a bit. We've actually established what's called an ESOP Communication Committee meeting, and we've had lunch and learn sessions where we go in there and do things like ESOP bingo, and we give out gift cards to people who win the bingos, and employees come in and, and learn more about the program.
Wow. Well, that leads to my next question. Has it been particularly challenging explaining ESOP to people?
Yes, it has. It's a very difficult plan to explain in a very simple fashion, whether it's eligibility requirements, whether it's allocations, distributions, allocations meaning the amount of stock they get at the end of any given year, when the money from the stock is available to them, what ownership rights do they truly have. It's definitely challenging to explain all of that.
I can only imagine, because I tried to, had to learn it and understand it for a client that I was advising, and I was shaking my head going, I need some expert help with this, because it's a little bit convoluted is a good word that comes to mind. And probably, you know, as with most of us, we get wrapped up in our day-to-day work, and we care more about what we need to know to do our job, not really what we need to know because this is a retirement plan or this is a way for the company to shift ownership to its valued employees.
Yes, that's very true. I've gone to about a handful of conferences over the last couple of years to learn more about the program myself. And in many of these conferences, you have the ability to connect with other businesses that are ESOPs. And whether it's a grocery store, a roofing company, or an engineering firm, everybody runs through the same challenges. That people show up to work, they do either what they really enjoy doing or they deal with the fires that are going on in front of them and then go home for the day.
Yeah.
And so to give them extra information, sometimes it's hard for them to digest.
Absolutely. So in terms of being an ESOP company, has that been something that matters to other stakeholders that you're working with, such as vendors?
Well, in general, we try to be a good vendor partner. I can't say that too many of our vendors have come up and said, oh, you're employee-owned now, we want to offer you an extra discount, or we want to participate more in product demos or whatever it might be. But our mission has always been to treat our vendors as a part of that larger community and participate in each other's success and really have integrity in all of our dealings with them. So I wouldn't say that too much has changed since we became an ESOP, because so many of the values that we've carried since we've opened have really just come to light a little bit more with an ESOP, but they've always existed.
So share with us what are the major values that Oliver has, because I think your answer will really tee up my next question.
All right. Well, first and foremost, we need to be a viable business in the county. So, you know, our niche is to
Absolutely.
Be the finest grocery. Yeah, we want to be the finest grocery store in the marketplace. And to do that, we see customer service, the customer experience, as a competitive advantage that we have. So we try to staff our stores with knowledgeable individuals, and certainly the people who are overseeing departments and entire channels are extremely knowledgeable in their areas of expertise. We have people that, like our wine buyer, sits on the board of Schoen Farms for the Santa Rosa Junior College. Our specialty buyer just recently flew out to New York to be a professional taster at the SOFI Awards. We just have very deep expertise in our product, which helps us better curate a selection for people that really love food, appreciate food, both in taste and quality, but also where it comes from. We're very proud of many of the Oliver's own lines that we've been able to create and partner with other local vendors on, local manufacturers. And then ultimately, at the end, we want to make sure that our employees have a place that they feel appreciated, that they're work-life balance is recognized, and we understand their desire to show up to work, to earn a check, to pay the bills at home, and that work doesn't drive them necessarily. We pride ourselves a lot in the fact that we have a very diverse work group, a diverse pool of employees here from everything you can possibly think of, and we embrace that, and we encourage them to be themselves, basically show up, put an Oliver shirt on with a name tag, and, you know, whether you have earrings or tattoos or long hair or beards, obviously minding by health department standards, everything else is fine because that's who these people are, and we respect them for who they are. And, I think that's a nice brief little description of what we're trying to do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and these are all values that are very common to social enterprises that are benefit corporations, certified B Corps, or social purpose corporations as well. And as I was preparing for the show, I came across an innovation that you are doing at Oliver's that I just found to be absolutely fascinating, and I'd love to spotlight it. It has to do with your efforts in reducing plastic pallet wraps. Can you share with the listeners what you're doing? Because I don't think I am aware of another company that is doing this. I'm not saying that they're not out there, but I've talked to a number of companies, and this is the first time that I've seen this. And as somebody who is concerned about our plastic problem, this gives me, like, so much hope.
So we've been a Sonoma County Green Certified business for 8 years. We were actually the first grocery store in the county to get certified. To do that,
wow.
We employed a sustainability coordinator. At that time,
uh-huh.
It was a person who was actually employed in the deli as, you know, a sandwich maker, and he came up to us with the idea.
And then on her part-time job, that person did the sustainability part.
Well, he transferred over from the deli into getting us the
part-time
in the deli
okay.
to full-time,
okay.
where half of his job was getting us the sustainability certification.
I see.
As he moved on and did other things, currently we have an amazing lady who is our sustainability coordinator, and the work that she turns in her passion for reducing our carbon footprint is just amazing. I applaud her efforts. She is so dedicated. But when it comes to pallet wrap, as you know, there's like a whole island of plastic out in the ocean, and you know, things like plastic wrap floating around there are one of the big problems that the sea turtles are having, because it looks like jellyfish and they start ingesting it and so on and so forth. So we were looking at how much we were using, and it was blowing our mind. And Annie, our sustainability coordinator, came back and said, "Hey guys, you know, I got an idea. I found these reusable pallet wraps that we could try, and you know, they weren't the cheapest thing in the world. But when she showed us how much we were spending on pallet wrap and the amount of waste that we were generating from it, it was like, well, God, why wouldn't we try this?" So she got one of the store's beer, wine, and liquor departments to partner with her and try a handful of them. And once she got them in and they started using them, you know, it took them, you know, really about a month to kind of get used to them, because they're just different. And once they were on board, it was like, all right, we can really do this throughout the organization. And so we purchased a bunch more of them. And over last year, I think we reduced our plastic wrap by about 1.5 tons, and if you stretched all that plastic wrap out, it would actually travel 27 miles from our Cotati store to our Montecito store and back. And yeah, we're very proud of that, and I applaud Annie for her efforts there.
Wow, that's amazing. And I saw on the blog post that not only were they not successful at first or popular, but you actually had to do some pivoting and change some things around, right?
You know, there's always some changes that we're willing to make to implement new programs because, you know, we sit here at the office and get a bright idea on, oh my God, this is how this is going to work. But when you actually get down there in the trenches and start using something,
yeah.
or, you know, playing
yeah.
with it in a back room or in the rain or on a forklift, or things work a little different. So we like to
right.
respect the fact that the people that are using it are going to give us some suggestions, and we try to listen to them.
Well, and I love that, because that highlights, you know, the ability of business to actually be flexible and be responsive to either their employees or to a vendor or a third-party stakeholder. I mean, just because you have an idea of something and it's great doesn't mean it comes out, you know, 100% brilliant in execution, and when you find that something doesn't work, you're able to incorporate changes to make it workable and maybe in some cases even better. But I really encourage all the listeners to check out the blog post on how Oliver's tackled the plastic wrap issue, and I'll include a link of that in our show notes. And speaking of show notes, Eric, if people are interested in reaching out to you for more information about Oliver's or about something they heard today, how would you like to be contacted?
Well, probably the best way would be to go to oliversmarket.com, and in the menu there's a contact us area, and on that page you can reach out directly to the office, or if anyone wanted to slide over to the part where it says meet our team, you can actually find me on that page as well as Annie, and it's actually called Our Staff, sorry, and any other person in the organization, and there should be some links to that for emails.
Thank you, and I'll, of course, have that on the show notes for people to look at as well. So as we're talking about the great work that Oliver is doing and all of the innovations that you are trying out or have successfully implemented, I want to go back to a more basic business question. We all know that the supermarket world or industry is extremely competitive. How has Oliver been able to stay in the competition and thrive using such a different business model from, I would say, 99% of all the other markets out there?
That's a pretty good question, and it really goes back to the beginning when Steve purchased Oliver's Market out of bankruptcy. It used to be a company called Farmer's Market. And really his goal at that time was, I want a grocery store that I want to shop at. And in thinking about the store that we'd all like to shop at, we could probably agree on a lot of things real quick. One, are the people there pretty nice? Two, do they have the selection that I want? Are the quality of the perishable products, meat, deli, produce, bakery, do they meet my needs? And is there value in what I'm buying there that it's not too expensive? So, you know, with that basic premise, we try to give people what they want. We let them shop with their dollars. If they're buying it, we're going to sell it. We're willing to try new products. And to really pivot away from the larger part of the grocery business, as you said, it's a mature industry, and, you know, it's very hard to squeeze a few more dollars out of it. We've really committed to an exceptionally high labor percentage in our company. And that's to attract and retain great people that provide exceptional knowledge of their categories and can give the information and provide the customer service levels that people who want to shop in a store like this would expect.
Wow. I can't end this show without asking you, so is Oliver named after somebody?
That's actually a great question. So the owner's name, I keep referring to him as Steve, his name being Steve Moss, but his middle name is Oliver's. It's actually Stephen Oliver Moss. And the story goes that when he had purchased the business, he was thinking, well, I could call it Steve's Market, but that doesn't sound real exciting. So he decided to go with Oliver's.
Okay. Well, you've answered a burning question for me, because I was trying to find that answer myself and was not very successful. So it's Steve Oliver Moss. I got it. Okay. I personally think that, you know, I wouldn't mind it if you expanded further and came down to Southern California. Are there any hints of doing that anytime soon?
Well, I have to admit, Southern California hasn't really been in the playbook lately. In the short term,
I'm
really
making
like
a
to...
pitch right now, Eric.
but we're always interested in the next opportunity for a store for us. So we'll be looking.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance between how much you expand and how much you can keep it as a local business, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, you know, defining ourselves as Sonoma County local, as soon as we cross that county line, our whole local message has to be transformed to some extent.
Yeah. Well, I guess in the meantime, I'll have to content myself with just visiting when I'm in Sonoma County. So as will all of our listeners, until and unless you decide to expand, in which case I would like to officially note for the record that Orange County will be first on the list, right?
You got it.
Well, it's been so much fun talking to you today. Thank you so much for your time. I know that it's never really a slow time for you, so I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to chat with us and share with us what a social purpose corporation is, what an ESOP is, how Oliver is doing amazing things in terms of helping the environment and creating a place that people want to come and work at and be themselves, and a place where customers want to come and shop at as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Quinn. I appreciate you having me on the show.
You're welcome. And that's our show for today. A special thanks to all of our listeners, both in the U.S. and international. We are an international show. We'll be back for another Women Lead Radio show on Mondays at 9 a.m. and on Fridays at 2 p.m. Until then, when your business does good, it's good for your people, your planet, and your profit. So keep doing good, everybody.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.